Blog Talk Radio.
We couldn't have a better show for everybody tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the one and only ScaryCast. I'm Dr. John Stamey, and Thursday nights, as everybody knows, is my favorite night because I get to hang out with my wrestling buddies early, and then I get to hang out with my ScaryCast buddies later, and it's a lot of fun. Just glad to be here. The city of Myrtle Beach is starting to pick up and look alive again, and so I'm very excited to not be living in a ghost town. It's great to be here with our good friends. First of all, Tony Filosi has a hall pass tonight. Today is Manzo Shepherd's birthday. As we know, Manzo is the subject of a book Tony is writing. It's going to be out in about a month, and we're going to do a big special. But both on Murder 123 Monday night and on ScaryCast next week, he will have some EVPs, assuming Manzo feels like talking, and I think he might, especially he wouldn't want to disappoint ScaryCast people. So anyway, Tony has a hall pass, and he's up in the courthouse with a group of people celebrating Manzo's birthday. We have with us, ladies first, our lovely, the queen of ScaryCast. Here she is, Robin McCray. How are you doing tonight, Robin?
I am doing great. Glad to be back.
We're glad you're better and back. I'll tell you that.
No more breaks.
That's right. And after I introduce our other co-host, I'm going to let you introduce our guest because she is a friend and associate of yours. And I think you would be best suited to do that. So from Hollywood, California, the one, the only musician, entertainer, comedian, and all-around good guy, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm having a blast. I'm just glad everybody's here. I got to talk to Tony a little bit and Papa Stroh already, so we're all good. I'll talk to all my friends, and so we're ready to go for the big scary cast tonight. Miss Robin McCray, you brought us our wonderful guest tonight, so tell us about her.
Well, here's the thing. I was very blessed. I have a very good mutual friend of mine and the other Robins. Now that there's two Robins, it's going to get confusing. And he had told me about her, and I was so intrigued. You know, we already know I get into this stuff really deep, and I deal with all different kinds of beings and hominids and cryptids and all the paranormal aspect of it. And as we were talking one day with my friend Duke, who will be here next week, ScaryCast on Thursday, and he said, you know what, there's a girl you have to meet. Her name is Robin as well, and you're going to love her. Like, she deals with the Pudgewuggies and the little people and all these other things and the gnomes, and he just went through this magnificent list, and I'm like, I have to talk to this woman. So he gave me the information to contact her. I called her, and we didn't get a chance to talk as long as I would like. It's been a crazy week over here. But she was just delightful, and she's as sweet can be, and knowledgeable just beyond belief. And she's one of these few people that I've met that just talking to her, you can just feel how legit she is. You know, when she says something, not only is it intelligent, well thought, it's right on target. And a lot of the things that we talked about, which, like I said, it wasn't a long enough conversation for myself, really validated a lot of things that go on with me as well. So that's even more fun to talk to her about. So she's just like this warm, loving person, but at the same time, just a fountain of information. And so I'm really thrilled that she could come tonight. Really am.
Well, we are glad to have her here, and thanks for bringing her here. So, Robin, why don't you start the chat off, and we will join in. How's that?
Which Robin? We've got to figure out how to do this.
Okay.
Because this is going to be problematic. Everybody, okay, here's the thing. I am known not only as Robin, but a lot of people in the Bigfoot field will call me Lynn, because I go by our Lynn a lot. So just call me Lynn and call her Robin, so we know who's who.
Okay,
and make it a little less confusing.
I may slip up and call you Robin Lynn. That's okay. Robin Lynn.
Call me Robin Lynn. That works.
Let's find out about our guest.
Yeah. Okay, Robin, why don't you start out and just kind of tell everybody what you're doing, what you're working with, and then we'll...
Let's find out about our guest.
Now I've got it playing in the background, too. Go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Robin Moonshadow. Moonshadow is my First Nations name. I didn't want to cut you off because you guys were having a great conversation about names. But if it does make it easier, you can call me Moonshadow when I am, you know, at a powwow or a potlatch. We do call each other by our Native American names. So if you wanted to call me Moonshadow, that's okay. I live here in Canada. I am a cryptozoologist. The two hominids that I do are little people, and whichever type of Bigfoot you want to classify them as, because you know we know that anything that even resembles a Bigfoot gets thrown into the Bigfoot pot. So, well, for that one, we'll just say, you know, wild people. And that would also be a hominid. So they are the two that I do, but I do mainly cryptozoology. I started my proto-pygmy research 8 years ago, this February, and then I started to share it online. And my first blog that I wrote about the urchin rack in Alaska, and all the proto-pygmies, the little people, are called urchin rack as a whole up there. And within 6 months, it was translated into something like 20 different languages.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was actually, yeah, I was so surprised that so many people took interest in that. And I was like, okay, well, if they like this, I got more stuff. So I wrote more blogs, and... a friend of mine who lives in Alaska invited me to do a podcast. Boy, was I ever nervous. But I said, okay, because these little people are real. And what they are relic populations of little people. I mean, it's human variation. We had giants, which is something else to do. We had little people, and then we have, you know, us medium-sized people. I mean, we also see this throughout the animal kingdom as well, you know, like the pygmy elephants, pygmy hippos, giant elephants, giant hippos. So this is just perfectly natural for there to be proto-pygmies. And, I mean, we do have proof of proto-pygmies. I mean, we have Homo floresiensis, also known as the Hobbit. They found those skeletal remains. And it's not a case of dwarfism. These people were just small. And then, of course, then there's Homo luzon found in Indonesia just last year. Same thing, but they're called it the one day there.
Miss Robin, I got a quick thing for you. We are joined by Papa Stro, the maestro of wrestling, one of our very best friends. Papa Stro, this is Robin Moonshadow. Robin, this is Papa Stro.
Hi, Papa. How you doing?
Hey, pleasure. How you doing?
I'm good.
Now, Robin, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I touched base. Hey, sweetheart, how are you? We talked about this when you and I were talking between each other the other day. Now, when you're dealing with the little people, or any of these other, I mean, they're all hominins. I mean, they're bipedal. Are you also experiencing the paranormal side of them, or are you just researching the scientific side?
Well, I'm open to the paranormal. If they can do that, then they can show me. I'm open to it. I'm skeptical, but I'm open-minded at the same time because I think that you have to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because if something weird happens, how are you going to explain that away? Because you can't always explain the weirdness away.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things, and this, I can't remember who I was talking to today, and I was telling them that I was really excited you were going to be on the show, and you seem to be one of these, you know, I'm all for the scientific side. Dr. Melba Ketchum did the DNA on the forest people / Bigfoot / Sasquatch, and, you know, she did all the scientific research on it. I deal with them not only in flesh and blood, I deal with them scientifically, and I deal with them paranormally. And I love being able to go back and forth across that line, because I think both sides are every bit as important in finding out what these things are, what their lives are about, what they do. And I just don't feel like you can limit it to one or another. And the person I was talking to today, and I said, you know, I'm really excited about this because you've got so many scientific facts and you've got so many research facts, but yet I felt like you really were open to the entire picture with them, including that paranormal part.
Because I love science. I just love science because I like to go out and get these facts and be able to present them to,
right,
quote-unquote, scientists. So then we can say, look, these things are real, and
mm-hmm.
it's time you did something about it. And for any of the paranormal that they might be able to do, we could work that out after. Let's get this other stuff going first. Like, I've got Bigfoot here that I could not get a lab to test. The one lab that I called that did do animals, when they asked me what it was, and, you know, I'm a very honest person, and I said, I believe it's Bigfoot here. Okay, and then I went on to tell them this is why it's Bigfoot here.
Yeah.
And then,
how'd that go
okay,
over?
Well, here's the problem with Bigfoot here. This is what he says. I already know this. He says, well, we have nothing to compare it to. I said, I am aware of that. You know, but you have to start somewhere. So if it comes back as an unidentified species or an unidentified species of great ape or something, then we have something to work with. And he just said, no. Yeah, we're not going to touch that. And that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah, they...
That's not the way
so
to
much...
go about doing this work.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of government interference with the research on the Bigfoot. And then Melba ran into the same problem. Now, when she ended up doing it, it was done because, and that's how she got into it. It was started off as species identification because people were finding these things and they didn't know what they were. And she didn't know anything that they even existed. That wasn't anything she was interested in. And she had people come in and say, okay, listen, this is, we just want a species ID on this. And she's like, okay, no problem. And she's getting it back and it's all these crazy things. And then when you get them back, automatically it's, oh, it's contaminated because it's got human DNA.
Yeah, why is that?
Because
of all these DNA studies that I've heard done, I think three of them actually came back as like an unknown primate, and the rest are contaminated.
They're
not contaminated. Why is it always contaminated? There are ways to take the contaminants out.
Absolutely.
I mean, okay, just send us a DNA sample, so then we can disregard that specific DNA sequence and get to the heart of the actual DNA.
When Melba did her study, the people involved with it donated their DNA to make sure that it wasn't showing that it was them.
Exactly.
And then they had, when they had it sent out to some of these labs, they were not told what they were testing, because she found that when she told them what they were testing, all chaos broke loose and it was shut down. So she just said, unknown species, test it. And she went so far as to have it done with robotic arms. And then, and I'm sure you would know more about this part than I would, there is that scale in the test that's done that will tell you what is the percentage chance of it being contaminated. And it was like, you know, a half percent or whatever, that there was a chance it could be contaminated, or it just was proven that it wasn't a contamination situation, and they still wouldn't accept it.
Yeah, see, this is crazy. See, in my opinion, say, for example, for me, I'm the one paying for this DNA to be tested. So why
exactly.
does any of that matter? It's not their money. It's mine. And I would
right,
pay
you just want the answer.
To go as far as I needed to go to get this hair sample tested. I mean, Lord forbid I should tell them I got feces here.
Oh, I know. I know. And, you know, the DNA, I guess, in that is even harder to prove on them, but it is there. I mean, I got it before as well. I had blood. You would have thought with the blood sample, that would have been the easiest thing, and they
well,
didn't
yeah,
want to deal with it.
What they say is, can you get a blood sample? And in my head, I'm thinking I'm sneaking up behind a Bigfoot with a needle and going to, you know, poke it in the back end to get needle or get a blood sample.
See, mine, it was a regular that was always at my house, and it was wintertime. And he was outside. He was always walking around the house anyway. And he had been outside, and he came up by the house, and when he was walking in the snow, either he stepped on something in the snow that cut his foot, or it was the ice, because we had had a lot of bad ice. And he literally, in fact, Dr. Igor Borsev was at my house at the time, and so every time he walked, not Igor, but the Bigfoot walked, there was a bloody patch. And so he did go in, and he did get the samples, but because of all the ice and everything, it just was not a good sample, unfortunately, to test. Now,
yeah, it would have been degraded by the water.
Yeah, they couldn't use it. But now, yeah, that, you know, when Melba did the testing, she had blood, she had hair, I mean, some of the hair I had sent, and she had saliva, she had a toenail. I mean, just this huge arrayment of samples, and yet every, yet, I mean, there was like 133 samples that all tested the same. And
a toenail would be fabulous, right, because nails
mm-hmm.
tell you everything. Just like hair, when you break down that sample, you have what they eat and their health, and you might even be able to get an age from them.
Oh, absolutely. They did. I mean, it was just fabulous. It just wasn't going to be accepted.
Yeah, see, I've been up arms a bit. That's because I got my hair sample down in the Carolinas. I brought it
mm-hmm.
home, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be easy peasy, and I'll get somebody up here to do it. Okay, we're more open about that thing. Turns out, no, we're not. So I was very disappointed.
We're not.
I was very disappointed. But, you know, I'm not done with it yet. I will find somebody, I will find a way, and I will get it tested.
Yeah, and the thing is, and I know several people, and I'm not going to say who did this to them because I'm not going to get in all the trouble they did, but that had samples, excuse me, legitimate samples, and their homes were broken into and taken. The samples were taken.
Yeah,
nothing
else like
now.
That before, so the best thing you can do is actually make it known to a heck of a lot of people that you have these samples. Because if mine go missing, there's going to be hell to pay. Oh, and guess what? I can get more. I mean, they're not ahead any.
No. See, we used to get them all the time because we had a fence that went around the property. And it wasn't even our fence. It was the neighbor's. And we had a large clan that came in every day. And as they came in, they would step over this fence. And it was like cattle fencing, the barbed wire.
Yeah, and they're getting their hair cut.
Every time. I mean, it was like this abundance amount of hair anytime we needed it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first time that I saw Bigfoot, and this is like the Patty type, was when I was 13 years old. And I'd been in the woods all day, but it was no different like it was today. I was in the woods all day. And I was coming back for supper, and I had gotten my, you know, I was wearing those pom-pom socks all us girls used to wear during that time,
yep.
And it caught in the barbed wire fence when I went through. And I just turned to unhook my sock, and there he was, standing in front of a tree, less than 500 yards. And I stared at him. I knew exactly what I was looking at. To me, they were real. No different than, you know, seeing a bear or a bobcat or a wolf in the woods.
Yeah.
But I never, you know, never thought that I would see one, especially not at 13 years old. And it did. It scared the heck out of me. I looked at him, and he looked at me. He didn't mean me any harm. He was just curious watching me. You know, he's watching this kid run around the woods. And don't know how long he'd been following me or watching me. What I initially did was I scared myself. I always regretted it because I could have stand there and looked at him all day, but I got a good look at his beautiful brown eyes. I guess he was a male body type. And
they've
it was like time slowed down. And then I could hear my heart pumping in my ears, and I ripped that pom-pom sock right out of the barbed wire and ran for home. And then I convinced myself that he was going to come down to my house and look in my bedroom window. you know, and I actually had the curtains closed, and every time the dogs barked, he was going to come down and look in the window. And it actually took me 2 weeks to tell my mother what had happened. Like, I didn't go into the woods. She said, so she's, you know, like, take me and show me. So I did. And then I just started to go back into the woods after that.
That's great. Now, Robin, let me ask you this, because I know you deal with, like I said, all different kinds of stuff, which is great, and I absolutely love it. Because as anybody that has ever talked to me or heard Jen and I talking or with Devin or Rob, at my house, it's a freak show on any given day, okay? Anything will be here. I have a picture of Lizard Man in the backyard, cat people in the front yard, ETs, beams coming down off ships. I mean, it's crazy. You know, portals opening up all over. But that's the normal around here. And, in fact, John and Rob found that out when they came out the first time to stay the night. But do you, in all of this that you're doing with all these different creatures and beings and cryptids and everything, do you mind speak with them at all? I mean, have they made that kind of contact with you?
No, but what does happen is if there is something around, I'll feel it. I know that hunters get this feeling as well, like they're being watched.
Yeah, but that's all a form of mind speak. It's not necessarily the words, and we've talked about that quite a bit on this show. I mean, you can get that feeling. It's just one avenue of mind speak.
I see.
Yeah. Robin Lynn, I would like to jump in and tell a story that involves both me and Rob. And Rob, I would like for you to weigh in. I think you know the story, don't you?
Who tells?
It was about a year ago, and we were holding the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival in Bishopville. And Robin had been kind enough to offer. She said, "You and Rob don't need to, you know, get hotel rooms or whatever." She said, "I got plenty of rooms. Come stay at the house, and I'll have sloppy joes." And I love her sloppy joes. So we went there, and it was
they're amazing. Robin,
the night
by the
was
way. Amazing.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm
going to
tell you, it was about, I don't know, probably 72 degrees, a windless night, moon was out, there's just nothing going on. So we're standing in front of Robin's house, and all of a sudden, now Robin, you know how the wind blows and how it affects trees. You know, the trees go back and forth and back and forth, you know, in general, unless the wind's changing direction. So Rob and I are standing there, and all of a sudden, the whole tree line to our left on Robin's property starts shaking. And so I just started feeling around, stuck my hand up to see where the wind was coming from. And there was no wind, and I mean, we were about 30 feet from those trees. And
there was only one bush that was shaking.
Well, that sounded like the whole row to me. And so it was scary. And so, and Rob, Maestro, I know you got a kick out of it. It was scary. I mean, all of a sudden, these trees, the trees, they were shaking. And Robin just said, "Well, they just wanted to let you know they're here." I mean, you did say you wanted to see something. Rob, and you can comment about me and my state of mind during that moment. You can say whatever you'd like.
Oh, I'm not going to lie. He was terrified. He literally stayed in my room that night because he was, like, so terrified to go back out there.
I stayed. Robin had an air mattress, and I stayed there. Absolutely.
Because
I would have
got the front yard, right?
See, I would have got
and,
closer.
And I felt some eyes and felt, you know, there were those that were watching, but I didn't get any bad vibes off of it. It's just that they were curious, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but... But with John, whatever
there,
he saw freaked him out so bad.
Well, before they got there, I was like, okay, you guys, you know, I want these people to understand I'm legit, you know, so, like, I don't want you hurting anybody. I don't want anybody jumping out and going boo and terrifying people. But, you know, it would be nice if you would just very calmly let your presence known, you know, nobody's coming to hurt you. I'm always, and they know me, I'm very protective. If I think anybody can hurt them, there is no way in God's green acres they're coming to my place. And I know which ones are out. We've got a little fan, well, we've got more than one, but this particular family hangs out in that set of bushes all the time. And their son, their child, is forever messing around on my porch or up in my trees. Like, he's broken more trees in two and branches down. It's ridiculous. But anyway, I told him, I said, just, you know, let them know you're there. And they had went out to the car. And they're coming back, and I look outside, and John's face is, like, completely ashen. Yeah. Like, we are going to lose John.
Well,
you know,
I had Dorothy
in the car, right? And I was going to bring – I have a doll named Dorothy, by the way. She's, like, my little girl. And
a little scary.
I was going to bring Dorothy in the house with me. But Dorothy wanted to be left outside because she was really digging – the company, I guess, outside in the car. So I just left her out there. And, but yeah, I mean,
tell them what happened when you came into the house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the vibes I got were just, you know, it's just like, for example, you got like a bunch of curious children just wanting to see what was going on, more or less. I mean, that's when I got them, which was cool with me because, you know, I mean, I'd be curious too. You know, some strangers would come.
Well, here's the thing. We get John in the house. And so he remains calm. I tell him what's going on. We go out on the back deck. John, tell him what happened when you went to the back deck.
Oh, that was my next story. Right. So Robin and I are out on the back deck, and I see a grayish light moving around the darkness in the back. And first thing I did was I turned around. I felt like I was in Amityville. You know, I turned around to see if someone was shining a flashlight from the upstairs, and it was pitch dark as it could be. And I said, Robin, what is that light? She said, oh, that's brownie. Just walking around.
No, it was
around
shadow.
And sometimes shadow.
Shadow, not brownie.
And you said, sometimes when he walks around in the dark, well, I mean, this is what you get. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah, and he was doing the belly crawl across the backyard.
It was, and Robin, it was just absolutely real. And then, you know, we got Papa Stro with us. We always like Papa Stro to go with us. And we got Devin. I mean, we got our own Adams family down here. We've got to
and then
come
he comes
down.
In the house, and he sees a ghost walk up my steps.
Oh, me?
All the time, Dr. John ribs me about Bigfoot, lizard men, and all that. But yet, that night at Robin's house, he comes to me. I've never seen him more terrified in my life.
When you do this type of work and you're out in the field, and especially for me, because 90% of the time I'm by myself, okay? You got to be brave.
Oh, Lord.
You got to get the info. You got to get the goods, which means you got to push yourself, even if you get a little bit scared.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want that stuff, you got to make the effort to get it, no matter how scared you are. I have been mauled by a bear. I have been mauled by wolves and coyotes.
Oh, my God. Really?
And I have been stalked by a cougar down in Lynnville in the Carolinas.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, see, you got to do it if you want to get the goods.
See, I've been fortunate. I haven't had, you know, any – I mean, I had – and it was weird because there was a black bear that would come through my property. The cougar would come through my property. We had dogmen on the property. Coyotes would come wandering through and bobcat. And I was very fortunate. I never – in this one area, I never had an event where – the wildlife got hold of me. Now, the Bigfoots would come up to the house, and they would, every night at 2 o'clock, they'd knock on the walls. And they would persist in doing this until I came outside. My own kids would come in my bedroom and say, Mom, we have school tomorrow. Will you just go outside with them, please? And I would go out in my pajamas. I didn't have a flashlight. I didn't have anything because they don't like those things. And I would go out there with them. And, you know, I would try to do the rule of, you know, you want to make sure you're positioned so that they can't cut you off from the house in case there's some ones that aren't friendly. And fortunately, I'm able to do, I can read them pretty well. And, you know, so I knew, like, if any were in the area that I just didn't feel that comfortable being out with, then I stayed closer to the house. If it was just my regular core group that I was safe with, I'd go out and sit on a log and they would just pace around me, you know, and talk. And I wouldn't take a flashlight or anything. I was like the total village idiot. I was that girl. But we had everything under the sun, but I was very fortunate because I never had any of that. Now, I will say that when I started doing that, all of a sudden when I did go walk around, we had like 10 acres, and I'd walk around that. We had another access to 10 other acres, and I'd walk that. And deer would follow me. Like, they would literally follow me. And then one time I went out by our fire pit, and I sat down on these benches that we had made, and I had 7 mice in a straight line come right out in front of me, look at me, and then turn around and go walk back in the woods. I mean, it was the most bizarre thing I've ever had happen. And then I went to go to the front of the house, and here comes foxes and their babies, and they just came out and looked at me like they were watching me. And, I mean, it was at that point I really started clicking more and more. It's like the Bigfoot will use other animals. I mean, they're notorious for it. I can tell you story after story on how they do it or why, and that, you know, and when they've done it different times with me. And that's what they were doing. They would send, you know, all these animals, and they would literally watch me. It was like they'd go report back. And it would happen all the time. It wasn't just once in a while. You know, I mean, it was just bizarre.
Yeah, I don't worry about the other animals, and I certainly don't worry about Bigfoot. If it's going to be aggressive, I'm going to know it, and I'm just going to leave it alone. Now, as for me,
yeah, exactly.
Here, that happened to me over 20 years ago when I was up in British Columbia. It was not the bear's fault. It was the gentleman that I was with. He was told that there was a black bear with cubs in the area, and he didn't tell me. So I was there for a week. You know, we got some hoops and hollerings, but he was really terrible because everything was Bigfoot. If the wind howled or the tree creaked, that was Bigfoot. If it was a wolf, it wasn't a wolf, it was Bigfoot. And it drove me crazy, and I was really glad to leave. But,
because not everything is a Bigfoot.
He doesn't do Bigfoot research anymore, thank goodness. But we were on our way out, and we rounded a corner, and there she was with 2 cubs. He ran. And she's going to do what she does, and she's going to protect her babies. I played dead, okay, and I'm the nearest target. So she rolled me around, and it was for enough for me to keep my face down. She put her claws into my canvas backpack that got, you know, shredded.
Yeah.
And she, you know, kind of jiggled me around a little bit. I stayed with my face on the ground, you know, because here we're talking, you know, from the cradle, this is what you do. Okay, it's a black bear, you can scare it off, you can play dead. If it's a grizzly bear, you fight. You fight tooth and nail. And if you happen to run into a Kodiak bear, well, you know, you're done for.
I didn't forget that one.
So that's okay. But the mother bear, she went away, and, you know, I heard her walking away, and I stayed down. She came back a few minutes later, threw some dirt at me, and left. So I waited a few minutes more. And I went and found this idiot in the tree, okay, which the bear could have gotten up no problem at all. I'm not a violent person, but I did. I punched him in the eye because I was more worried for that bear. But she just attacked the person. Now she's going to get shot, and it was his fault. I didn't report it. I didn't report it. It was his fault. But, yeah, as for wolves, it was actually a timber wolf when we did have timber wolves in my area. And I was about 15 at the time, and I was almost to my parents' house, and I got that feeling to turn around and look behind me. And I saw a big old timber wolf, great big wolf, beautiful, of course. I was aware that there were wolves there. I wasn't worried about it. And then I get coyotes around my area that will follow me. And I've actually had a koi dog come just walking right up beside my house. And I knew it was a koi dog by the looks of it. And I said to it, what are you doing? You want to get shot? Get up in the woods. and it went. We also have fishers here. One followed in behind my tracks one day. It was a big one, and it was a big, big fisher. That sucker was at least 50 pounds by the tracks. So now I carry, high-powered pellet gun.
Yeah.
I can't hurt an animal, but I will defend myself. And I'm I'm actually more worried about the fishers because they're temperamental. And they have been known to attack people in my area, so I want to be careful. Okay, you stay over there, Fisher, and I'll stay here, and we'll have no problems.
Let me ask you this. In all your travels and all the different things, because I know it's, I mean, to go over everything you've done in the course of our show, there'd be no way. But out of all your travels, all the things that you have researched and investigated, what, in your opinion, would be the craziest thing ever? Like, the really out there, but you were able to get the research and the proof that this exists?
Let me see. Well, not proof. The craziest thing I've ever seen, and it was my cousin and my niece also saw this, okay? I was about 11 years old at the time, and my niece was 2, and my cousin was 13. We had taken her for a walk in a little bit of a woods where I grew up, and there was this outcrop of rocks at the far end of this hay field. I mean, it's the size of a football field, just to give people an idea of how big it was. And we saw this great big white-colored cat with gray in it and the longest tail that I've ever seen. We did not know what that was. We were just kids. We came back, and we told my parents. And they're like, well, maybe it was a bobcat. Maybe it was a lynx. And I'm like, it's not a lynx. Lynx are only white in the winter. It looked like a big bobcat, you know, from a distance in the summer, camouflage, right? So then years later, I find a picture of exactly what we saw, and it was a snow leopard.
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic.
A snow leopard here in Canada. We don't have them here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking somebody's pet got out because, you know, rules have changed since way back then.
Yeah.
About keeping animals here. And I find it very funny because when I tell people what we saw, they kind of laugh at me. But then they don't laugh when I tell them I was 13, I saw a Bigfoot. I'm like, what's the difference?
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
Well, you had
mentioned.
You had mentioned to me the other night when we were talking about pudgewoggies.
Oh, those little rats. Okay. Okay.
Can you tell us about those?
Oh, pudgewoggies.
Pudgewoggies. I never say it right. I'm terrible with names. Everybody that knows me knows I suck at names.
Or just say pucks for short, you know, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They are the worst of the little people. I have never heard anything good about them, ever. I mean, this goes way back to when, you know, it was just First Nations here and the giant Moshop. Okay. They were jealous of Moshop because he was loved by the people, by the First Nations people. And he did everything for them. He loved them. You know, he was a little bit lazy, but he loved them. And his wife was a little person, and she was a Mamie Gwessing, of which I do have a picture of. Amazing. I'm surprised I got it. I still go on about it because my partner in America, he's been able to get 2 pictures of little people. He got a Pukwudgie and got a native little person. And I said, I would love to get a picture. And I did on my trail cam. Things. But anyways,
oh, wow.
I'll get back. Anyways, Moshop's wife was one of these little people, these hairy little people, often mistaken for juvenile Bigfoot. And these Pukwudgies were so jealous that, you know, when Moshop went on one of his fishing trips, they started raising, you know, hell rage. They were, you know, just causing mishap and stuff. And they were kidnapping people, you know, and just being mean and beating people, and it was nasty.
Yeah.
So I went to talk to Squint. That was the little person's name. Her name was Squint. And they said, can you please help us out? Can you do something about it? They're awful, et cetera, et cetera. So she went and got her sons. There were 2 or 3 sons, and she went and got them. And in some stories, the Pukwudgies kill all the sons. And when this happened, well, Gwenda is just beside herself. So she finally, and she goes and she gets Moshop. Moshop come back, and, you know, and they throw the Pukwudgies everywhere. You know, him being a giant, he can do that. And they get rid of them, or so they thought they did. And how it goes is he threw them as far as the Great Lakes region, which is, you know, around my area here. And, you know, this is why different areas have Pukwudgies, the legend said. But the ones that came back were worse than ever. Again, they were kidnapping people. They were beating people. They were killing people. They had to lose a little bit of maybe eating people.
Yeah.
And they played it.
They're not as friendly as the sort.
No, they hate. They hate all. They hate all people. You know, us medium-sized people. And in some stories, Cop is so beside himself over the death of his son, he just goes away and doesn't come back. In another story, the Pakwaji kill Mo Shop with poison arrows. And Squint, she goes back to her people. Now, this is where a different story comes into play about Squint. That she's sick, and one of the little people goes to see a medicine woman in the village to come and get her to heal Squint because she's very sick. So they travel for a day, and they go underground. Squint is very sick. It doesn't say what she's sick with, but, you know, the medicine woman was be able to heal her. And as a gift, they give her medicines and herbs and shiny stones. And this kind of goes with what we know about proto pygmies, that you know, 98% of proto pygmies live underground. And that's including gnomes and native little people, with the exception of the Dewandis, one lives in trees. The other Dewandis, which is more like a red cap, you know, that's the second of the little people because they are like pranksters, but they're mean pranksters. I mean, there's been reports that come from Argentina. Okay, they look like gnomes. I should say what they look like first. They look like gnomes. They file their nails and teeth down to a point. They are dirty and raggedy looking, and their beards are matted. Okay, I call it anti-gnomes. And they pull these horrible pranks on people. They will stick sticks in the books, right, to send people flying. They'll just jump over the ditch and do this. They will inhabit abandoned buildings and throw stuff out the window at you as you pass underneath, rocks, bottles, broken glass. And there is a house in Pennsylvania that's besieged with these red caps. They just delight in scaring us, really, because they get a kick out of it. So they don't like us. But it's like they're just mean, but not as bad as Pakwaji's. Okay? Pakwaji's will piggyback each other to appear taller than what they are. And now you're not to underestimate them, because they are intelligent. They have a language all their own, even if it just might sound like murmuring to us. They can speak our language. And one report that I had gotten was, I can't remember off the top of my head right now. It'll come to me. But he was walking his dog. He would walk his dog every night at a certain time. And he heard what he was calling to him. He'd come here, come here. And it appeared to be, you know, taller fella, but he knew it wasn't. But they will watch you, and they will stalk you, and they will know your routines, and they will deliberately set out to get you. One of
Dave's
listeners contacted with me. He lives in Texas, and his area has Pakwaji's. And this is, it's not a rural area. I would say it's more like a suburb of some sort. And all the neighbors know about it, but they don't talk about it. And they just, the cats will go missing, small pets will go missing. They've had dogs go missing, but not great big ones. Like, they'll leave the pit bulls alone and the bigger dogs. But it's the smaller house pets that go missing. Of course, they're going missing. They're being eaten.
Yeah.
Robin, I got to say this. You start talking about that stuff, watch the property values start going down in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Because everybody want to go see one.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I've been to Pennsylvania, and, I mean, I got called out there to do some work with the Bigfoot. And that place, that entire state is its own Skinwalker Ranch. I'm telling you, it's crazy there. And then
Pennsylvania, has always had a unique way about it, just like the Carolinas.
And New York does too, over in the Hudson area.
Settlers in Pennsylvania, I mean, we've got stories of Bigfoot, wild people, and all sorts of things coming out of Pennsylvania. I mean, and then you've got Gettysburg, one of the most haunted places in the world, because, you know, the amount of violence and blood that was shed tore the veil. So you're getting things coming in and out of there all the time.
Well, it was my first trip to Pennsylvania, and, of course, I went there to take care of some Bigfoot issues. And we went up into the mountains, or what I consider the mountains, and there is just a whole lot of evil living up there. I mean, literally. I was stalked by a reptilian, got attacked by it in the hotel room, you know, and we dealt with some groups of foots that were up there that were just excessively deadly. Aggressive is an understatement. These things found you and they wanted you dead. That was basically it. And that's what I had been called there to work on. But then, you know, we went to other areas, like over by the campground, and a lot of the ones that were going in there, they were getting into people's coolers and taking their food and watching them, I mean, really. And those there were not the highly aggressive. They just wanted what the other humans had. You know, that was all. I mean, they weren't looking to hurt anybody. But there was this one group that was up there, and you could feel how deadly they were the second they showed up. And we had gotten out of the car, and we were walking, and we noticed some things on the trees that were definite indications that they were there. And it's like they just showed up. And at first it was a cloak situation, and then every now and then you'd see them starting to uncloak, and just massive. And they were probably one of the worst groups that I had at that point had ever encountered, let alone had to deal with. I mean, and it turned out all right and everything went well, but they are a hot mess. And I mean, and the ETs that are up in those mountains are off the charts. Like anything paranormal, anything cryptid, anything hominid, you're going to find it in Pennsylvania. It's a hotbed.
Well, yeah,
well,
I mean, Pennsylvania is very unique. I mean, I look forward to when this virus stuff is done with, because that is my first stop. When this is done, I'm going. This would have been my second. Well, I was supposed to go next week. Second trip to Pennsylvania. I was there last week, and I actually found my very first gnome footprint. And I do believe it was gnome or a forest gnome. I was very excited. I was being taped. I had to keep my cool, but, you know, I was very excited. And, we went on, and we got some whistling going back between the five of us, and about three Bigfoot, and then two more came in. They stayed behind the trees, and just as it was starting to get dark, you could kind of make out shadows, but you weren't quite. That went on for about 20 minutes, the whistling back and forth. I wasn't afraid. They were friendly.
Yeah.
But it was very unique because, you know, when I go into an area, I never expect anything. But, you know, I've just learned now to expect the unexpected. If something happens, fantastic, great. If something happens and if it doesn't happen, okay, well, you know, there's always those other times.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it was a very unique experience. The whistling going back and forth and the gnome the gnome boot print that I found, and I was able to track it.
I would love to see that.
Oh, it was phenomenal. It was on a show that I did. It's called Cryptovania. It's on Roku TV.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, they taped us as we went out, and then when we came back, we did our interview. It was just a blast for me.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, like I'm a woodsy.
What's the store for you now? what are the next big research plans?
Well, other than going to Pennsylvania, I plan on going to Allegheny because I want to look into the Apple Witches, a.k.a. Apple Snitches. They are described to me as chimpanzees. They have been there since the Seneca Indians arrived. Okay, so what we are talking about right there is indigenous chimps. Yes, it is possible.
Robin, how tall are these beings supposed to be?
These apple witches are about 4 feet tall.
Okay.
What they do see is, well, they're gone extinct. I'm like, well, no, they just moved out of the area because people are all moving in there, looking for them, camping out, and it's disturbed them, so they moved. And I get reports from Washington State and the surrounding areas of Pennsylvania there of these apple witches, and everybody's like, well, what is going on? Where are they? And they're explaining them to me. I'm like, these are apple snitches. They come from Pennsylvania. They can be aggressive. They'll throw stuff at you. One woman told me about an encounter she had just walking down the road, and she had a piece of rebar as a walking stick. She encountered one, and I don't want to be gruesome here, but it was, you know, eating a cat. Because everybody in that neighborhood were having pets go missing, you know, their cats and small dogs.
Yeah.
They're going to eat it. It's meat. And she stood up for herself, and it, you know, it took off. Luckily, had come to pick her up. She was just walking to meet her. She, you know, defended herself with that rebar, you know, hitting it on the ground and saying, get, go on, go on, go on. And she got just as aggressive. And, I mean, like, some of what she described is, you know, aggressive chimpanzee behavior.
Yeah.
And she did exactly what she was supposed to do. But I think it might have been a different story if she hadn't had that piece of rebar.
Yeah, you know, one thing I wanted, I'm sorry, I want to get just a quick thought out, and then Robin Lynn. Yeah, let me tell you what I found out, because I've just put the finishing touches on my new book, The Lizard Man Companion. And what I have found out, there have been lizard man, and now you would think lizard man probably the south, east, and maybe down through Texas. Lizard man's all over, all over. Even Devin Tate. Devin, are you there?
Yep, I sure am.
And you know what I'm getting ready to say. We have the lizard people of Los Angeles. There was a whole group that lived there thousands of years ago. You want to tell how popular they have become in pop culture? Goodness gracious.
They're very popular. A lot of people know about them. They even appear in a recent Showtime series, I believe, called Now Apocalypse. Has a lot of references or allusions to the L.A. lizard people.
That's,
you know,
really,
we had a sighting up here in the 80s in British Columbia. Two teenagers saw it, and it chased them off the beach.
Well, I'd love to find out about that. I've still got time to get that in the book. And what I can tell you is
I'll send you a copy.
Please. A very, very famous author, Salman Rashid. If you don't remember what he did, he was on the hit list by a sect of Muslims because he wrote the Satanic Verses. Well, his book that preceded the Satanic Verses was called Shalimar the Clown. And it had many references in the Islamic culture. They are no strangers to the lizard man and that type of entity. It's very interesting. And apparently the lizard man entity, and this comes from passages in the book, was very familiar and had interactions. So like when I was saying about the reason I was asking how tall were these snitch witches. Well, that sounds very much like an animal. Up in Minnesota, Jen Cruz, our friend of the She Squatchers, she said that they're all over the little short Bigfoot, and they're about three and a half.
Are called, what they call, little feet, I do believe.
They're called lots of cool things, and guess what? They're also in Kentucky, because we're putting together a book of Kentucky ghost and paranormal stories, and we will have the Kentucky Paranormal Conference. It's now got to be rescheduled, and it's going to be online instead of in person. It was going to be July the 18th, but I can't wait to get that out.
Well, I'll tell you something that happened down at Pink Beds, you know, in the Carolinas there. I was a skeptic of Lizard Man, okay? I'll tell you, straight out skeptic. we're going, and we're going through pink beds, and we come across a three-toed track. And it was a continuous track, okay? It's not like something lost a couple toes. Both feet look like this. It walked on 2 feet. Okay, my brain says to me, okay, let's figure out what else it can be first. There's nothing else.
Correct.
We found it in the mud. We have pictures of it. And it was a continuous track, and it walked into the woods. So that kind of blew my mind.
Now, when you say
yeah.
pink bed, what? That's not a town I'm familiar with.
Oh, no, no. It's a state park. There, in North Carolina, it's a state park. And it's called pink beds because the flowers that come up every year make the whole area pink.
Like, where? What is it near? What city?
I think it's close to Marion.
Oh, my goodness, that's where I'm from. Morganton. So,
yeah,
yeah, I know exactly.
I might be wrong.
No, you're right. You're right. I just hadn't thought about that. Yeah, that's out. It's kind of out in the country. Yeah, absolutely.
Make a note of that. This is what happened, okay? And when Christopher Davis reported the Lizard Man report, okay, when that got out, everybody flooded the area. And even right now, I find this happening with the hikers in the woods. You're going to push animals out. You're going to push them far back in. So, like, I'm not even getting, like, over the past couple weeks, I haven't gotten one report of Bigfoot. I haven't gotten any reports. It probably take me forever. Because we even see this when people go missing in Bigfoot areas. Because Bigfoot and total pygmies, share territory. So there's no competition for food, not a threat to each other. So they share territory. But when somebody goes missing and then you get a whole bunch of people coming in, the animals, even just, you know, wolves, coyotes, foxes, whatever, everything just, you drive it out. It goes further back in, or you drive it out of the area, and you don't find anything. So that's what happened with the Lizard Man. I mean, you know, other witnesses came forward afterwards, because sometimes it only takes just one person to say something. But the sheriff, at that time, he believed the report, but it should have been investigated more. There are no pictures of the cars. It was damaged. There wasn't any pictures of the area taken with track. I mean, I understand that they did the best that they could do, considering it was, what was it, 1988 when that happened? In the 80s. But with a report of, say, that magnitude, more research should have been done to get that proof, because that is a very big deal.
Yeah.
Well, you know, these are interesting
also,
topics, and I think
like,
the more people we talk to, the more we see that these cryptids tend to be everywhere. They just haven't been as well covered, like the Bishopville and Christopher Davis thing. You know, I've got a huge section on Chris Davis in my book, and I got to thank the local newspaper for letting me reprint all the articles. We found it's very, very strange that his police file has disappeared. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, because I couldn't
1988.
Even.
Well, I just did a FOIA request.
I was able to find a smidgen of his testimony that was recorded, like visually recorded by video, but I could not get the transcript of his testimony.
Well, now, which one was this? Was this the one by South Carolina Educational Television?
No.
Because I got the transcript. I found that. I have downloaded that, and I have got his testimony. I have got Liston Truesdale, the sheriff's testimony. I have transcribed those. So those will be in the book, and they are amazing. They're just amazing historical documents. If you can think of those, please let me know. However, I do have, and I've got to go down to the Sumter County Sheriff's Department. They're going to let me look through and take pictures of everything from the murder of Christopher Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And So I can't wait to get those, and I can get some of those in the book. This book seems like it's never going to come out, because once you get into it, you just start finding out that Lizard Man's everywhere and all that. So it's just great to talk to you.
A friend of mine, her grandfather was in Vietnam. And him and his buddies chased a lizard man into a cave, and they found like 12 lizard people. I'm like, well, were they lizard people with a skin condition? She said, no, lizard men. And they were ordered to shoot them on sight.
Wow.
Yeah, my grandfather. Yeah, I guess it would be maybe. Yeah, my grandfather. Excuse me, great grandfather was in Vietnam also. And some of the stories that came out of there and things that they saw are just incredible. I mean, cryptid wise.
I'm taking notes. Great. Now, Robin McCray.
I've got this stuff from when I was 5 years old. This is how long I've been doing this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. The reason that I learned how to read when I was 5 years old was for these reasons. I started reading comic books, and my siblings would read to me, because, I want to read this stuff, even if you guys don't. This stuff doesn't scare me. This stuff is amazing. And also, being First Nations, of course, we have our oral histories. So Sasquatch is as real to us as it is a bear, a bobcat, a wolf. So there was never any questions in my mind. And it's the same with proto-pygmies. Now, I saw a proto-pygmy when I was 9 years old in my aunt and uncle's house. He had a green tint to his skin. And, at that age, we just called him the troll. We didn't know what else he was. When I got older here, I found out he was called Inamico, and they're very rare. Now, I saw him 3 times over that one summer, but I never saw him again. He lived in between the walls of my aunt and uncle's house, and my cousins knew about it. My aunt knew about it. I told my mother, and she didn't believe me. I told my aunt, and she believes me. I'm like, you got to tell Mom then. And the last time I saw him, we were all outside playing with the dog. He was looking around at us at the corner of the house. And another one of my cousins was also with us, and it scared him so bad. Oh, my goodness. He went screaming and crying to his mother. We were just kind of laughing. No, he's not going to hurt you. He's just seeing what we're up to. They like kids, like children.
Wow,
so,
this is incredible.
For that reason, there isn't any reason why I shouldn't believe in proto-pygmies. I mean, like, there are several different types. I mean, like, you got the hairy little people. I mean, you got the little native people. Then you've got, like, trolls, and trolls kind of count. And I got a report of that from England, of a woman seeing this little clawed little hand come through the window, of her, because she was on the bottom floor, open her bird cage and take her budgie or parakeet out.
To eat it.
She didn't do anything because she's watching it happen, and she just can't believe what she saw. No doubt it ate the bird. I mean, the small trolls, they stink. They're habitual hoarders. They do live under bridges and dank places, like legends.
Come up for shake and bake. Goodness gracious.
Some, I don't know, maybe he ate feathers and all. They eat just about everything.
Wow.
And I mean, I have for little native people, they're all over. I have, plaster casts of their little moccasin footprints. And something else that is a common denominator with all little people is their foot is no bigger than 4 inches. I have one foot cast of my hairy little friend here, but he's in a barefoot. And there was such a big difference between, you know, a juvenile Sasquatch and a little person. I mean, their feet look, with little people, their feet look like our feet. Okay. Where the Bigfoot feet are, where the toes are all about, you know, all at the top and just about the same length. And little people feet, they just look like ours. I mean, they look like kids have been running through the woods in their bare feet. Little kids. Like I have plaster cast disease, and a very unique one that I have is one that is 3 inches, and I found that very odd. And then I got one that's 2 inches. Again, I found that odd. So I found the 3-inch and the 2-inch side by side. And
oh,
as I'm
cool.
reading, as I'm reading about Homo luzon, the males are bigger than the females. And then I'm realizing this is the same case with protopygmies, that the males are a bit bigger than the females. So what I found was a female and a child. And I do have plaster casts of those. I have pictures of all this stuff. And what I'll do on occasion is if I come across the track and I've got a pretty good signal, I will live this. And see what I am casting it so then I can show you. Hey, these are not deer prints. I mean, these are moccasin prints, and these are bear footprints.
Yeah.
But, you know, protopygmies are everywhere. So what we see, they are a relic population of humans. I mean, we're seeing this everywhere. I mean, like take the case of Peking Man and the bones from him, they just disappeared, never to be seen again. And they lived, you know, side by
I don't
side.
Think we know what all's out there. I think, you know, people like you that do the research or whatever are more aware of it.
Yes.
Because I think we've been dumbed out. Sorry, you guys. Still trying to get rid of this cop. I think everybody's been dumbed out
mm-hmm.
and told that none of this stuff exists, even though it's right there.
Well, like we were talking about lizard men, I mean, the belief in lizard people go back to, I mean, Sumerian and Babylonian times.
Yeah.
And then when we get organized religion, everything else just gets pushed to the side. You can't worship these things as gods no more. They don't exist. So we'll just ignore them. I mean, when the first Europeans came over here and started seeing the protopygmies, the little people, they were shooting at them. Saying, you know, they're devils and they're imps and they're evil, when they were not. I mean, they would have been perfectly happy to help people because they helped the First Nations. But when they were getting shot at, they just said, this is enough. We've had enough of all this nonsense and we're leaving. And they went underground. I mean, and the old stories... in the old tales. I mean, even up here, I mean, people are shooting at Bigfoot. We taught them to be afraid of us.
Oh, yeah. It's entirely us. It really is because, I mean, I'm not going to say there's not aggressive ones. There's good and bad and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've treated so many things badly. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we have to look at ourselves as far as why things are afraid of us or why we're hated by this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we know that there are aggressive Bigfoot. But, you know, like anything else, it's going to have its own personality. I mean, and sometimes there is a good reason why a specific species hates humans.
Yeah.
If they're getting shot at all the time, yeah, of course they're going to be afraid of us. Or they're going to be aggressive. Look at the Scottsdale monster. I mean, like... it would kill
and
put him in the yard. I mean, it killed a pony.
Well, and the ones
know,
that aren't nice, they will, or even the ones that aren't so nice, they will give you signs, you know, to back off or whatever. I mean, most of the time. I'm not going to say 100% of the time, but a lot of people don't pay attention to the sign.
Yep.
And then they get mad when they get aggressive, and it's like they've been warning you for the last X amount of time. And you wouldn't acknowledge it.
Well, yeah, like I find with wood knocking, and it's with the case of my brother, that he'll wood knock and wood knock and wood knock, and then we get stuff thrown at us. Well, you just aggravated that Bigfoot, and you that's your fault he's throwing stuff at us. I mean, he's not just throwing stuff at us in a way to divert our attention or scare us off. He means business.
Yeah.
Like, as for not exactly sightings, but things that I've had happen over the years, yeah, I've gotten things, you know, thrown at me. Just to, you know, scare me away or divert my attention. It hasn't been in an aggressive way. And when they get aggressive, if you're not paying attention, you're in trouble. Yeah. Because they will do whatever they need to do to protect their family unit. They will protect their baby, their mates, their family, just like you would do. I mean, that's like a burglar breaking into your house. You're going to do the same thing. And then you've got, like friendly ones that are familiar with people, like you see yours are, that are familiar with certain people and will trust them. And, again, that's a learned behavior, right? Because they got to learn that from their parents, like these people are okay, but stay away from these other ones. And if they carry a gun, I know they don't like guns.
No. But if, you know, there is back, there's been throughout the years, I mean, and I would say within the last couple hundred years and probably even before that, there are reports where they've actually, the Bigfoots, you know, the hunters have been out there hunting game or deer or whatever, and they see the hunter and the hunter tries to take a shot at them, and you find the hunter and the barrel of the shotgun is wrapped like a coil around their neck.
Yeah, there is a story like that up here as well. But with instead of the gun being around their neck, it's around a tree, and the hunter never went back into the woods again because he was poaching.
Yeah.
I mean, also up here, I mean, they'll bring the Native Americans up here have stories of Bigfoot bringing back lost children. It's not like we weren't keeping our eye on our kids, you know, because kids will wander off. And you'll go home and look for them, and the Bigfoots will just bring them right back.
Well, but the thing of it is like, on a lot of these kids, like, we'll go in the house and make lunch and let our kids play in the backyard because we figure it's fenced or whatever, you know. And these females, and some of the males as well, you know, they're not where they're going to leave their kids unattended. So where the mom or the dad might have went in the house to make lunch, to answer the phone, to do whatever, thinking, you know, that this child is safe either within a fenced-in area or an area that it's in, it's not going to go anywhere, and they just don't see it that way. Because the thing is with the Bigfoot, their ways are not ours.
That's right.
The way they do things are not like we do. They don't know why we do the things we do. And there's so much miscommunication between the two sides. And so they look and they see this child out in the backyard. Now, the mom might be right inside at the kitchen sink making that child a sandwich or whatever. All they see, and the only thing that they process is, oh, my gosh, look at that child alone.
Yeah, that baby's been left alone.
And so they come in. I'm not going to say that there aren't some that do it maliciously. You get your moms that have lost a child, just like with us. Or you give, you know, various ones that are doing it for not good purposes. But for the most part, when they do it, that's why. But they have more deaths of our children, but it's not because they're killing. People misunderstand this. They find these kids and they're dead or whatever, and they're like, well, you know, it's because a Bigfoot killed them. No, that's not it at all. 9 out of those 10 times, it's because our kids die of the elements because they're not used to, well, it doesn't matter if it's room temperature, super hot or super cold. They die of exposure and elements because our bodies are hairless and we're not used to living outside like that. But they aren't the ones killing them. They might have had a hand in it only because they were trying to do something right and it went belly up. But the thing of it is they did not take them, not all of them, I would say a good 85%, they're not taking them to hurt them. They're taking them because they think they're being protected. You know, I've heard stories too where, you know,
kids will get taken and they are with a group of other kids and maybe that child was getting picked on.
Mm-hmm.
And but they do it most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time it's actually for a good, you know, to be good.
Yeah.
But their ways are not ours. They do not understand our thought process, do not understand why we think the way they do, and they don't understand why we behave the way we do. And
yeah,
that's one of the reasons that John and myself and Jan Carter, you know, Rob Kellum, William Henry, Pat McCrae, I mean, the whole list of us, go and we do these conferences because it's so vital that people understand those their ways are not ours. They're never going to be. They don't even want them to be.
Yep.
And
yep,
we
yeah,
need to be able
to do human-like behavior. People will humanize them. Well, why did they do this and do that? That's exactly right. Their ways are not our ways. They see a child by itself. They think, oh, my God, there's a baby by itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, you get a lot of that.
Yep.
You know, there was
a
case, and I'm sorry, but I'm getting tired.
Every single person that goes missing on Bigfoot. There's millions of reasons why people go missing every year. I mean, like in Alaska, there's a high amount of missing people. But, I mean, it's a tundra. It has polar bears. I mean, if you walk in on ice, it will open up on you, and you're just gone.
Yeah.
There
was a little
reasons
boy.
To blame every single thing on Bigfoot is a mistake.
It is.
What
I agree.
Fear element. And then it creates the killer ape mindset, and everybody is going to be terrified of a Bigfoot and go out and kill it. That is a mistake.
Well, yeah, and the thing of it is
I am so against killing Bigfoot. I mean,
absolutely.
In the olden days, we don't have the tech that we have now. But, I mean, I think it is. This, why I am so against shooting a Bigfoot, A, example, and this is just a theory, and I'm just going to put this out there, this theory that I have. This year alone, I have seen at least eight juvenile Bigfoot tracks as compared to last year or year before where I either saw one or none. It could be, okay, now this is not a fact, I can't prove this, but it's a theory, that like great apes, they only have babies every so many years. And if that is the case, that means that there is less of them than we think because of their birth rates. And you cannot be shooting that when that should actually, if that is the case, should be on the endangered species list if their breeding is that slow. I mean, have a kid, you know, like what, every 10 months. We could have a kid every 10 months and all that. But they have to nurture that baby until it's a certain age and then have another one. I mean, and if it's every so many years.
Well, and I can only speak for my clans that have been around myself. I mean, I'm not going to talk about, say, for the entire population. All I can go by the research that I did and that I watched and observed. And mine, I mean, it was really very similar to a schedule of that we have as far as to have children. And it was very common to see one pregnant and still nursing. But mine mine had no problem having them every year. I mean, I'm not going to say the entire population. All I can tell you is what I witnessed. And they were pretty fertile. But the thing of it is when they first tried to discover a species, okay, they would have to have 900 sample or dead bodies on a slab to be able to prove that species because they have to prove it's a breeding population that exists. It's not an anomaly. Well, that's fine.
Yeah. That's right.
But
that's the
DNA,
the
DNA already proves these are a human hybrid. Everybody can panic about it. Everybody can throw a fit about it. DNA doesn't lie. And when you get, like we were talking earlier, you're getting into, you know, samples tested with robotic arms and everybody else's DNA tested to make sure it's not been cross-contaminated. The DNA doesn't lie.
They are what they are. You can't change it. Doesn't matter what you thought they were before, what you think they should be. They are a human hybrid. And so you've got the what I consider a moral issue, which I'm against shooting anything anyway unless it's for food. But,
yep.
You know, you're looking at another human that you're killing. And I also, in any species, any animal, I feel like this with any of them. If the only way we can prove they exist is to kill off 900 of them, we got serious issues already. And we need not be proven anything because you're decimating it. I mean, look at how many animals have gone extinct because of us.
Exactly. I agree with that totally because it will never just stop at one body.
Never.
One body, they're going to pick it apart, and then they'll want another one. And
well,
another
and they
one,
get
and
the one. Yeah, when they get the one body, they say, "Oh,
the
look
DNA
it.
Is
it's
telling
a,
them we don't need to kill it."
Yeah, but when they get just the one body, they look at it and they're like, "Well, this is just an anomaly. You know, it's not the normal. It's a freak thing that happened." And so they're not going to have a breeding population. There's not going to be more. It doesn't matter that people are seeing thousands of them all over the world. I mean, that doesn't matter. I mean, the amount that are really out there, when I was at one particular residence I lived at for a while, I decided I was going to keep a journal of all the different individuals that came in. Just at that residence alone, and they didn't live on my property. They were on my they walked into my property every night. They were there during the day. I mean, you would seldom find a time of day or night they weren't hanging around. You know, even if it was just a couple of them, there's always somebody around. But that being said, I got up to 65, and I could give you a physical ID on him and tell you what I was calling him as far as a name just to know who I was talking about. But all different characteristics, personalities were different. Behaviors were different. Looks were different. There's no two alike. People drive me crazy because they're like, oh, no, it wasn't a Bigfoot. It didn't have the cone head. So there are no two alike. No, they don't. I mean, Shadow, his head looks so human, it's not even funny. But, I mean, as far as that goes, there's not two that are alike. They're as individualized as we are because they are part human. So, I mean, it's just
you
really
got their
crazy.
Faces too. If you can look right at their face, I mean, their faces are different just like ours are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, like, I'm like you. Like, I might be First Nations, but I don't hunt. But if I had to hunt, I would hunt for food because I think that is a waste of life. Trophy hunting to
I agree with you.
Trouble.
You know, you don't trophy hunt. You hunt to feed your family.
That's
you
right.
know, all my boys
and
hunted.
And for an animal to give up its life so you can eat, that's a gift.
It is, and all my boys hunted. But every one of my boys, and they've taught this on to their children, both boys and girls, know there's respect for what you're doing. There's a right and a wrong way to do it. And the first time you don't end up eating everything from what you take, you are done. You are cut off. It is over. You know, and they also know, like, let's say, you know, you get a couple of deer that season. You push that meat out to whoever needs it. You don't just sit there and hoard it, you know. And all of my kids, I'm very blessed in that when it comes to hunting, that's they're very ethical about it. You know, they're not doing a lot of suffering. They're, you know, if they don't take responsibility for it, if they're not eating this meat, they don't have to eat it in one sitting, but if they're not going to eat the meat or whatever, they're done. They don't just trophy hunt. I mean, that's great if you do get a trophy, and you got a deer with nice horns or whatever, and you're using all the meat and doing what you're supposed to be doing, then that's just an added bonus. That's icing on the cake.
Yes, I agree.
But
yep.
You don't go out just for the purpose of the trophy.
Yeah, like these big trophy hunters that go and kill elephants and stuff like that. That's awful.
Oh, they turn my stomach.
Life to me.
Yeah,
it's just a life to me. I am so against trophy hunting, like on so many different levels. But it is,
I know.
Like
right.
You said, if you kill an animal and it's beautiful and you're going to eat it, there's nothing wrong with putting that on your wall. You're proud of it and you want to continue to admire it.
Well, yeah.
And you know what? I'm gonna jump in and say, I'm sorry. Finish that, and I want to jump in because we're close to quitting time. So finish that thought, please, Robin.
Sorry, go ahead.
You there? Yeah, go ahead and finish that sentence. Yeah.
I just quit. So against like trophy hunting on every level.
I agree with you.
You know, and what if that was to happen to a Bigfoot? I mean, that's just horrible.
Yeah. And God knows there's been many people that have tried it.
Yeah, we know about Ape Canyon, don't we? We know what happened to them. And they got
off walking. Yeah, exactly.
Because I think if you're going
to
shoot at a Bigfoot, and especially if you kill it, you're done for.
Yeah, and if they don't get you, here's what they do. If they don't get you and kill you, they believe an eye for an eye. They will mentally destroy you and your family. And it carries down. Unfortunately, they don't limit to just the person that did the act. It goes through the entire line down through these people's children. And I know several people that have been doing things that they shouldn't do, and now this is where they're at with it. And you can't get it to stop because they will continually torment you mentally as a payback. And it will go on to your children. It'll go on to your grandchildren. And it's like, I mean, that's the legacy that you're leaving them.
Yeah.
It's like a generational curse.
It is. It really is.
It is. And I tell you what, to everybody tonight who's been on here, it's been wonderful having you. We're, as my dad used to say, it's about quitting time. And I want to give everybody, we got about 30 seconds for each person to say a goodbye, plug something that's coming up like Papa Stroh taught us how to do on WCW Retro. And in fact, I'll start with Papa Stroh, and then we'll go to the ladies, and then Devin and I, and we'll say sayonara till next week. So Papa Stroh, what you got going on?
Well, yeah, a pleasure being on here with everybody here once again. It's always a blast. Tomorrow night, midnight PM Standard Time, on my Facebook page, facebook.com/KillTheMaestro, the Stroh Zone returns with a feature, She-Wolf in London. So tune in.
That's a great movie. I remember that. Well, thanks, everybody. Tomorrow night, midnight, watch Pop Stroh in the Stroh Zone. And I bet Dorothy will be there, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, look, thanks for being here and hanging out with us. And, of course, I always love being on WCW Retro. Now, Robin, our guest, thank you so much. Learned a lot from you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. I could talk about cryptids when the cows come home.
Well, you know, the cows aren't coming home, so that's great. And we'll have you back again soon. I'd love to. I do want to talk to you, though, about Lizard Man before I get to the very finishing stages of my book, because if you got some good stories like I think you do, I'd like to include them. So, again, thank you very much for being here with us. We really appreciate it, and you're always welcome to call in anytime. And the Queen of Scary Cast, Robin McCrae, thanks for bringing our guests tonight, and thanks for being here.
Well, my friend Duke Sullivan gets the credit for that because he's pretty amazing. He will be here. That's what I'm going to plug. Next week, Thursday at 10:30, Duke Sullivan, one of the sweetest people I've ever been blessed to meet, and he runs World Bigfoot Radio. I've done some interviews for him, and he's fantastic. He knows so much information from all over the place, so it's going to be fun to have him here. So I'm looking forward to that, too. Robin, it's been great having you here, sweetheart, and you and I will definitely be talking.
I will be here anytime. You got
great.
My ear.
Yeah,
all right.
That goes both
ways. Great. Devin, what have you got? You and I got
the last. Well, it's so nice to be here with all of you. When you guys were talking, it reminded me of the hidden people that live in Iceland and how Iceland has a whole different approach to them because they take them so seriously that they will relocate roads that they're building just so as to not disturb the elves and the hidden folk.
Oh,
the hidden folk and the little people are different. You know that they have an elf school where you can go and learn about these.
That's great.
Yeah, they are so open to proto-pygmies, little people. I wish we were the same ways here.
I got to find out about it. It sounds awesome.
Entirely different. It's fantastic. I just love the way that they approach it.
Well, this is wonderful. We've all learned a lot. And I want to say just thanks to everybody for being here. We'll have Robin will be bringing us another guest next week. We start the week off with the same crowd plus Tony Pelosi. We will have Robin. We will have Papa Stro. We'll have Kevin and me on Murder 1-2-3. And next Thursday night, the greatest wrestling show in history, WCW Retro with Papa Stro. And then leading up into Scary Cast. Thanks. Have a great one. We'll see you next time on Scary Cat.
Take care, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.